Welcome to the Cosmic Eye Show, where we explore spiritual ideas and books that help you live a better life. Hosted by spiritual teacher and author of If You Can Worry, You Can Meditate, Jason Napolitano.
All right. Hello. Welcome to the Cosmic Eye Show. I am your host, Jason Napolitano, and I have on the line Mr. Chris Sheridan. How are you doing, Chris?
Doing great. Great to be here.
Awesome. Chris is, of course, the co-host of the show. We are here each week bringing you esoteric, occult, psychological, mythological, religious, and or whatever else we can come up with subjects, hopefully entertaining you. Our show is called Cosmic Eye, as you know, if you've been listening. We do wanted to say one thing. Thank you for anyone who's supporting the show, supporting us financially. We really appreciate that. And we can use all the help we can get. Help expand the show and move forward and bring this material out to more people. So if you do enjoy this and you do think it's important to bring the topics out to the larger world that we're talking about, please do support us. We're at anchor.fm/cosmiceye, C-O-S-M-I-C-E-Y-E. We can put that up on the video. We are on video today as well as on the podcast. So please check that out. We'll have information about where you can watch the video of Chris and I each week if you want to watch that in addition to listening to the podcast or one or the other. So I'll put that information in the information that's under the podcast, the description part of it. So this week we're going to talk about individuation, Jung's concept of individuation, and some of the mystical paths that he was interested in. And Chris is actually going to run the show today for the most part. I'm going to chime in once in a while with my thoughts. So I'm going to hand it over to you, Chris, and go ahead and lead us into some spiritually uplifting and psychologically illuminating work today.
No problem. Pleasure to be here.
You like that? Did that really set everything up for you?
Yeah. Set me up for a fall, maybe.
Wow,
so I'm glad we picked a very easy subject, Jung and mysticism.
Right.
Little light time. Reading to prepare for this one. Wow, heavy stuff, depth psychology, but that's what this stuff is. It's very difficult to look at yourself fully and honestly, or to look at the world around you without getting to and through some of the difficult and sticky parts to it. But as you said, yes, we're going to talk about Jung's concept of individuation, what it means. We'll use some examples and descriptions, what he thought it meant. And then the second part, we're going to discuss some of the different ancient traditions and ancient wisdom sources that Jung seemed to pull from. It looks like he's all over the map. He wrote a book on alchemy and man and his symbols and myth and meaning and De Ching, and wrote about tarot cards. And it seems like, wow, he's all over the place. But he's not really all over the place. These are different versions of telling the same story. These are different methods that the ancients used to really, what he thought, described in their own way what he has termed the process of individuation. So we'll go through that and some of those different old traditions and bring them into the 20th century with Jung. And then we're going to bring everything home. What does it mean to us, the individual, individuation? Yes, means a lot. And how we can apply some of these techniques and some of these concepts, because they're not just something to look at or something to entertain yourself with some ideas, although I do find that entertaining. Really, the value in them, the ancient traditions as well as Jung's teachings and his writings on individuation and other things, it's really meant to be practical and useful and to help you in your individual life with individuation. So, Jason, if you'd like to start us off with a description maybe of individuation, or pull anything from Jung, maybe some background on Jung.
Absolutely. So as I understand it, I mean, there's hundreds of different descriptions of the individuation process. Some more technical, some less technical. There's the kind of clearest way that I understood it was described by Jung in in this great video that is on YouTube. It's a 3.5 hour video of him being interviewed by a psychology student in the United States. And he's asking Jung about the individuation process. And Jung's reply in terms of what that actually is he basically describes it as an acorn being planted and an oak growing. It was a very simple description. And essentially, it's a metaphor for, the psychological and spiritual unfolding of one's inner being, one's psyche. But really a beautiful and clear way to put it. Again, it's described in many different places in many different ways. But essentially, it's man's and woman's search for his or her self. Capital S self, the higher self within, or the totality and sort of spiritual idea of the self without, and finding the merging of those two things. It's a union of the opposites that can be described as that. There's a lot of different mythological language used to describe it. One of the better explanations that I found is, I'm gonna give recourse to a book here, is in Yolanda Jacoby's book, The Psychology of C.G. Jung, right here. And she describes the process quite well in her work, and she draws mostly from Jung's work from Aeon, A-I-O-N, one of his most famous and later works, one of his most mysterious and challenging works. But most important works. It describes a sense of individuation in Gnostic and sort of esoteric Christian terms. But it's a very important work. That's kind of a basic outline of it. Maybe you can lead us to the next stage, and we'll move forward.
Well, sure. When I first heard the term individuation, it almost seemed like, well, are you just becoming selfish, or removing yourself from society and from the world, and I'm just going to be my own person, my own island? And that's not really the case. It really lends more towards being indivisible, that you are both at the same time indivisible within, and you're indivisible from the world around you, but you are a standalone, not a part, but this part of the whole, my part, this totality of my being, is complete. It is whole, matured, just like you were describing the acorn fully maturing into an oak tree. And like an acorn or other seed, we have this, at least the spark of it within us. And I know Jung talked about how this is really the goal of consciousness. You're using your consciousness to increase consciousness, and the end result is becoming fully conscious.
Yeah. I don't mean to interrupt, but it also, one thing that struck me when you were saying that is, there's a personal element to it and a transpersonal element to it, and the merging of those two into sort of a one, but with the individuality in essence still intact. It's a tough concept, but once you kind of wrap your mind around it, it does make more sense. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt,
Well, chime in. We're having a dialogue, a discussion. That's what makes this podcast so great, is that we get to have this, not only just adding two people together, but having that exchange and interchange of ideas. And I hope people listening too can chime in on the comment section and let us know what you think. But Jung used a lot of different methods or examples, from alchemy, the Chinese I Ching, the tarot cards, myth, rituals, masks, dream symbolism interpretation, all lending towards this concept of the self, this larger self. We have our ego self and our persona, that which we kind of show to the world, but that's only part of it. We have these maybe forgotten or disowned parts of ourselves that we don't want to look at, some we are aware of, some we are not aware of, and they exist in the shadow, and the shadow is also part of our entire being. So I like to look at it as a sense of healing, in the sense that the root word healing has to do with becoming whole, that it's your whole and complete, you know, there's parts you like about yourself, the part you don't like about yourself, they've all come together now and brought you into a complete whole self, of which the ego is one very, very important part, but it's just a part. Jung also was involved in very early on in 12-step recovery. And in the big book, you can read about that very early on. And it was, you know, using this spiritual prescription, and that is to, you know, believe in a higher power. And that can be an internal thing. You don't necessarily have to believe in God or something like that, but it can't just be you, just your ego mm-hmm. self. There has to be mm-hmm. something beyond who we are and what we are. And to really get a sense, and to become that, you also have to let go of who you thought you were.
Exactly. That. Let me jump in real quick. I think it's important to contextualize this for the listeners. One thing we didn't talk about in the beginning, in the introduction, which I think is important, is to understand why this idea of individuation and why this particular new mythology is critical. In other words, why is it even important for us to understand this today? And one of the things that both all, I should say, Jung saw this, and many of the romantics, many of the modern age saw this as well, that we as humans were losing our mythology. We were losing our myth. In other words, in the West for us, that myth, that overriding myth was the Judeo-Christian tradition. Mostly, you know, for most people, it was the Christian tradition. And so when that mythology and that the power of that, the trajectory of that particular religious movement began to come into question, and people began to look at it historically and critically, and so as the scientific and modern sort of thinking came into play, we gradually lost faith, as it were, in that understanding and in that mythology. And Jung and many other spiritually inclined individuals at that time felt that we were losing something that was essentially human about ourselves. And so this new path of individuation that Jung is proposing and that a lot of people have picked up on is a new myth that involves ancient myths. It involves new myths. It involves story and things that are important in our lives today, but understood in a new way. And in a sense, it resurrects the ideas of Christianity and Judaism and other religious ideas in a new understanding and in a new light. And that's why this understanding of individuation is a very important concept. I just wanted to kind of frame that. I'm sorry for interrupting, but I think that's important for people to understand why we're even talking about this. Do you know what I mean?
I do. That's great. Thank you for adding that. One thing I will add to the myth that we're losing, that perhaps we have lost, in an odd way, we've actually regained it in the movies. I don't know if the movies are the new myth, but it's definitely the new methodology by which we can get in touch with myth and what it means to become more of ourselves. Even just American, good old American movies or any Western movie, actually does a pretty good job with this. In 2 hours, most of the time, you'll see the hero, the protagonist, start out a certain way, and then they have to go through something, and at the end, they have to let go who they were and become who they really are. And that story theme, which is, you know, parallels Joseph Campbell's hero's journey, the departure, the initiation, and then the return, has resonated so much. And I think that's why we like some of these movies, how we identify with the characters, because we want to become something more than who we are, or we feel that we have something in us that is more than what we're utilizing and what we're living out through our lives. We want to become that. So we have this seed, this dormant seed that wants to have life again. And we can see in movies, even flawed characters that get redeemed at the end or somehow have to become a better version, a bigger version of who they were when the movie started. One sort of equation you can use to look at the, you know, this process is that the hero starts out as person B and goes through trials and tribulations C to become, or B rather, to become person C at the end. Mm-hmm. So it really is a myth in the Campbell hero's journey sense in so many movies. Just quick examples, can use Luke Skywalker. Of course, he started out, and really the time frame is very, very short in the original Star Wars movie. Yes, he's a good pilot to begin with. Yes, he has a lot of technical knowledge, but he gets caught up in this whole situation, leaving his planet, getting involved with this group of characters, saving a princess, all these very, very rich mythological things, the death of the mentor that gives him a sacred object like Excalibur, and the sacred knowledge on how to use it. And at the end, there's a scene when he's in the trench at the Death Star, and he hears Obi-Wan's voice, and he's using all the technology. He's got his ship, he's got the proton torpedoes, he's got the targeting computer, and he hears this voice that says, let go, trust your feelings. And he turns off, consciously, he turns off the tech, the technology that he had been relying on and so well-versed with. That had been really a strong point because he, you know, fixed robots and droids and things. But to turn that off and let your feelings go, let that larger extend out and use the force. So, you know, he started out as a farm kid and ended up a nubile Jedi Knight at the end in just a few short days. Casablanca, Rick Blaine, he starts out a very discouraged, bitter cynic, mm-hmm. You know, hurt by love. And then, of course, his lover also, you know, he was hurt by, shows up again. And oh my God, here's this shadow. He tried to stuff it down with alcohol and moving away and far from Paris and her as he could ever imagine. And of all the gin joints and all the towns and all the world. And she walks into mine is the line from the movie. And of course that sends him in a complete tailspin, but it actually brings out something in him, something that he never was before, that he maybe never thought he could be. And we see this at the end because he becomes selfless and through unconditional love, he gives up his place on the plane to Lisbon and gives it to Laszlo and Ilsa. So he, you know, very selfish, very cynical, and then he's very hopeful and unselfish, unconditionally loving, sacrificing, at least potentially sacrificing himself for the greater good. So same person, completely different person by the end of, again, another, you know, maybe 3 or 4 day movie timeline.
It seems, too, those are great examples. Thank you for both of those. It seems also that there's a sort of a process going from a sort of a fragmentation or sort of fragmented personality to a wholeness. That's that progression. And again, that Luke Skywalker example is very good in terms of him. You think about them. He's letting go of the ego. He's letting go of that technology. It's almost like it's a really powerful myth for our time. We are very reliant on technology, the scientific outlook, thinking, etc. In the end, in order to accomplish his goal, he has to let go of all of those tools, and he has to trust himself. He has to trust his higher self. He has to trust the Force. And thus he's able to transform. And Rick in Casablanca is another good thing. He's another good example because he is giving up something. He's giving up his own ego needs for the greater good. And it's the same sort of a mythological motif, I think, So both great examples. One thing that I did want to bring up as well is the idea of the individuation process. And it's going to take different forms for different people. You know, there are steps along the way. Two of the bigger steps you did highlight in a small way in your overviews. The first, generally speaking, the first step in the individuation process, as I understand it, I mean, obviously everyone's journey is different, but generally speaking, in psychoanalysis and the individuation process through depth psychology, the first archetypal sort of idea that you meet with is the idea of the shadow. And that's where we begin to understand that the parts of ourselves that we don't accept, we project onto other people and turn into somewhat of an enemy. I suppose the shadow figure, in essence, is sort of a dark father as well. Darth Vader, dark father. I read that the other day. I thought that was fantastic. I had never made that connection before. But Darth Vader also represents the shadow part of Luke. You know, oftentimes the shadow figures in dreams or in mythology literally come out of the shadows, or they're in dark clothing, they have dark hair. You know, Darth Vader had a dark mask on, a black mask. So they tend to have that kind of symbology or symbolic motifs. So, you know, that's kind of the first stage. And then the second portion of it is then the understanding of the opposites, the anima or the animus, which are that's the contrasexual element within us. So as a male, the contrasexual element would be the anima. That's just like a sort of soul figure. So the sort of feminine in man, and in a female, it would be the animus, which is the sort of masculine, symbolically speaking, portion of herself. So we have to come to some understanding that there are those different parts of ourselves. Those play out in the female characters or the male characters, depending upon who the particular hero or heroine is in the story. And those are, you know, two of the first kind of portions of the individuation process. It goes on, and we won't have time to cover all the stages, but those are two very basic things that are pretty easy to see, particularly in mythology and movies. So I wanted to add that as well.
Okay, great. And Jung, throughout his career, seemed like he approached individuation using, as I mentioned at the beginning, different sources of ancient wisdom and examples of transformation. One he really spent a lot of time with, and I know we've talked a lot about Manly Hall and done several podcasts on the secret teachings. Actually, when Jung decided to write his book, Alchemy and Psychotherapy, he borrowed from Mr. Hall's collection several documents, manuscripts, symbols, books of images, and these alchemical processes, because he felt that alchemy, you know, presented and also alchemy is from the West, but it presented, like what you're talking about, the different steps and stages, because alchemy isn't just, well, you turn the lead to gold. You go through all these processes. And so individuation is a process that has that suffix, you know, T-I-O-N. So in alchemy, you have calcination, you have distillation, you have mortification, fermentation,
those are all different phases of the individuation process represented symbolically through alchemy, and those are things that actually occur within us, right?
Well, that's really the point. And even like we're talking about movies. Like Star Wars, and yeah, somebody sacrificed for the greater good or became a greater person for the greater good. The individuation process, yes, it will help the collective, but it really takes place in the laboratory of your own individual self. So there may be external metaphors, changing lead to gold, but really you're changing your own leaden or heavy, dark, tarnished aspects of yourself, and through, you know, distillation, calcination, all these different processes, you're changing it. You're changing you. You're changing your consciousness. What you think about, how you think about things, what's important, what's not, to get to this gold state. And gold is such a great metaphor because it's a metal that doesn't tarnish. You can do anything you want to it, And you can, no matter what, you melt it back down again, even if it's stuck in rock. If you get it hot enough, it comes out gold. So there's this purity to it, as well as, you know, value. It's definitely a more valuable metal, but really what we're doing in ourselves. We're making ourselves golden from our leaden self. And it doesn't happen, again, it's not just a one-step process. So it may take a lot of looking at the shadow, like you're talking about reconciling the opposites. That's a really big theme, especially when Jung talks about the I Ching, the Chinese divination tool that's thousands of years old. It's the same thing with yin and yang. They are seemingly separate and very, very different, and of course, opposite ideas or forces or concepts, but that's more of an illusion. They are just two sides of the same coin, different in form or in appearance, and maybe their function and process, but they can't exist without each other. And I think that's a really big problem that in the West, especially in the United States, is a problem. And it's everywhere from our political theory that we have this two-party system, which really makes no sense whatsoever. There's no chance of a coalition. It's kind of winner takes all. So you have these opposing, it's yay or nay, it's, you know, left or right. You can't have left without right conceptually. We seem to think that politically, that it's, well, it's either God or science. Well, you can really have both. And if you don't know that, read Einstein. He talks a lot about God. And of course, he's a great scientist. So that those even seem to be split or at odds with each other. Now, they can take competing ideas because you're looking at something through a different lens, but really you have to have both. And that's where Taoism with yin and yang, where alchemy, and you're talking about this fragmentation, our personality becomes fragmented. In the Inca tradition with the shamans, they believe that at any point along your life, any trauma that you suffer, any loss or rite of passage or the difficult change you go through, that every time that happens, part of your soul is actually broken off. It doesn't go away. It's still hanging around there somewhere, but it's not integrated. And there's a procedure called soul retrieval. It's a whole shamanic ritual that, you know, is fairly involved, but in the simple version is that you get all these broken pieces and you bring them back together. They're reintegrated. They're welcomed back into your being.
Mm-hmm. That sounds a lot like the idea of the complexes and the different parts of ourselves that gets split off in Jungian terms. And then that would be part of that individuation process is reintegrating those sort of broken off pieces of ourselves. Oftentimes, you know, speaking of the shadow, the parts of ourselves that we tend to reject, that don't fit into the sort of norm of society or our own role in the family or what have you, tends to get shoved down into this portion of the unconscious known as the shadow. And, you know, Freud saw that really as the unconscious as sort of a storehouse for all of the sort of negative and evil aspects, I guess, of human life. Whereas Jung saw the potentiality for our own greatness in there as well. So we can even sort of repress or shove down parts of ourselves into the shadow that are gold in essence. And I think sometimes, speaking of the sort of metaphor of alchemy, that's where the gold is actually in the shadow. The gold is in that dark part of ourself and has to be sort of excavated out. And I think that's a really nice metaphor for that. So really all these things you're talking about, the I Ching, this sort of shamanistic way of doing things, alchemy, all just different symbolical systems, metaphors, ways of facilitating the individuation process, as Jung understood it. Would you agree?
Well, definitely. And even like I mentioned before, the work he did really at the onset, he's kind of the spiritual father of the 12-step program and that whole movement. Those are 12 steps. That is an individuation process where you come in and you're one way, an addict, alcoholic, And by the 12th step, you are definitely sober. You definitely have to be. And you are at the point where you're sponsoring other people, conducting meetings, and you are now the mentor helping the sick and suffering in the rooms of the 12-step program. One easy example, probably the easiest one, that I don't know how, if Jung would agree that this would be individuation, but as far as alchemical processes go, the example I like so much is baking a cake. Whereas, you know, you start out at the beginning and you have in alchemy, the prima materia, that's the initial stuff that you're working with. So if it's metals, you know, you're starting with lead. And if it's you, or like you mentioned, the acorn, you're starting with a seed. The acorn has the oak tree in it, but it has to go through a process. It needs to be activated. So it needs to be put into the ground. It needs to be watered. It has to have minerals. And when it sprouts, it has to have light and continuing that light, water, mineral process for many years. And it becomes a full grown oak tree. But alchemically, if you just want to think of baking a cake, you have, you know, the first ingredients, the prima materia. You have the flour and the baking soda and the sugar, a couple eggs. I don't know what else you need, butter maybe. So you have the stuff, but on their own, it just looks like a bunch of stuff. And then you mix it all together. That's this coagulatio process of alchemy. And then you just have this disgusting mush. It doesn't look good, doesn't taste good, the texture's awful. You would never serve somebody this. But then you subject it to the heating process, this calcinado, this trial by fire. So you put it in the oven, and then that the oven is like the crucible that cooks this thing. Or if it's you're working with metal, that you have to heat it up to get the dross and the impurities out of it. And in the example of a cake, what happens is you end up with something that's, it contains all those pieces, but since they've been mixed and put, you know, down with water and stirred and then baked, you have something that is wholly different as well. And that's the end result. The individuated self is really different than the ego self. It contains it, but it's been mixed and cooked, so to speak, to where it becomes like a tree, matured, and it is really a wholly different substance. Or you could take like a watch, all the parts of a watch. You have a spring and a cog and a gear and a hand and a winder, you know, and all these different things. Each of them needs to function properly on their own. But when you put them together in the correct way, it becomes something wholly different. Now it becomes a timepiece. Now it becomes something that really can work in the world. So you can think of those things also as metaphors.
Yeah, no, that's a fantastic metaphor for that. I was struck by that. And, you know, the, as I was thinking about that, all those different processes that you were speaking of there, the Latin names and so on, sometimes can get overwhelming. One of the great, books that, both of us like, and, I don't know if you showed this one earlier, I don't remember, but Anatomy of the Psyche, Edward Edinger is a fantastic guide and a very readable and understandable, book that lays out all of those different steps. Of course, alchemy is wildly complicated and contradictory, and it is a chaotic mess in a lot of ways, and that is the beauty of it. But Edinger manages in this Anatomy of the Psyche to be very clear and to connect those things to the process of individuation that you were talking about in your cake analogy. In a very, very interesting and readable way. So I just wanted to make sure that the listener and the watchers of the video can see that book that we draw from.
All right. Well, I guess now we can move on to...
Yeah, we're going to have to, unfortunately, start to wrap it up.
Well, let's get to this next phase about the...
Absolutely.
What does this mean? Okay, so we've talked about Jung and individuation. We've described movie examples and different alchemical and I Ching, different processes a becoming whole, or a shamanistic soul retrieval to become one, to become whole, wholly ourselves. How does that play out in our lives now, today? Not looking backwards, but looking really in front of us. And how can I individuate? What are the things you can do to bring all these broken pieces, these fragments, and pull them out of the shadow and invite them back and have them fit together in the right amounts, in the right way, that we become something more than what we were when we started?
You know, that you bring up a great point, and that reminded me of a lecture that I listened to by Edward Edinger. And it's called Individuation, Man's Myth, Man's Modern Myth, or Modern Myth for Man, something like that. It's on YouTube. And I think he has a book of the same title. He's also drawing from his book, The Creation of Consciousness, when he talks about this. But one of the things that he points out that's a very good way of getting started with this material, to even understand that there's different parts of ourselves, to understand the concept of projection, the shadow, and so on, is to begin to look at things in your daily life that push your buttons. Things that you love, things that you hate, people that push your buttons for no particular reason. Those are the sources that are most active in us that we're probably most unaware of. So they are generally connected to the shadow portion of ourselves. And that's something that we can do. We can take a look at something that bothers us to a great degree. We hate it. You know, we're passionately angry against this or that particular thing. We're indignant against this or that particular movement or this or that leader. And we can see what is in ourselves that is like that. So it's a difficult process, but when we do look at it, it's very illuminating. So you've got to analyze those things that really, really move you one way or the other. Either you love them or you hate them. And I think that emotional content, that affect that's connected to that, is a really good sign that there's something constellated within you. In other words, there's probably a complex or some portion of yourself or something that you don't want to necessarily acknowledge in your own psyche that you're projecting out onto the world or out onto another person or situation that you need to look at within yourself. And it's difficult to do, but it is very illuminating. Even to understand that there are different parts of ourselves is sometimes challenging. You think, oh, well, these different parts of myself, I must have multiple personality disorder or something. And it's not what we're getting at. If you slip in and out of personalities, that's, you know, well beyond what we're talking about. It requires, you know, serious psychiatric care. But what I'm talking about is these different things that move us within, these different parts of ourselves that seem to, you know, sort of seize us at times. You know, we're somewhat out of our right mind, as we might say. You know, we get seized by those impulses that we afterwards, when we're calm, we look back and go, what the hell did I do that for? You know, and how often do we do that? We just blow up at someone for reasons well beyond our conscious mind. Those are the things I'm talking about. When you can start to shed some light on it, on those things. Those things that move you so deeply and so sort of unconsciously, you begin to get in touch with those different parts of yourself, and you begin to get a handle on who you are, and you can integrate those things into a whole. And Jung always said, and all of the first generation analysts always spoke about how there's no such thing as a perfect person. Well, we're not striving for perfection; we're striving for wholeness. It's a different concept than trying to be this pure, perfect person that's without sin or without any blemishes or imperfections. And it's saying, okay, look, this is me, warts and all, and I accept that. I'm trying to work on the things that I have issues with and that I, you know, I'm projecting onto others. I'm trying to pull those projections in. So one thing Jung said was, oh, I heard that dog. What would be cool is if people were watching this video and we could actually show them the dog, because we talk about that dog every week in this podcast. And if we could show that dog, we'd really be onto something.
You could set your watch to that dog.
I love that dog. But the point is, hey, one thing that Jung said, and just then I'll stop and I'll let you take over again. I'm sorry. Is that, you know, when people would ask him if he thought we were going to survive into the future, this was at a time when nuclear war seemed imminent. Russia and the United States were at loggerheads, and there was the Cuban Missile Crisis. And actually, this is pre-Cuban Missile Crisis, excuse me, because he died before then. But there was a lot of tension about the atomic age. And, you know, Jung would always say, look, I don't know what the future holds, but he said, I think we have a pretty good chance. I'm paraphrasing poorly. I think we have a pretty good chance if we work on our own consciousness and if we all become conscious enough. And so, you know, that's another thing about individuation. It's not a mass process. It's not an ism. It's not a utopian ideal. It's us each working on our own issues within so that we can create a sort of a new cultural and sort of spiritual zeitgeist with our own contribution of consciousness to the whole. So with that being said, I'll pass it back to you. But
very good point. And that probably brings us to a good place to close on this. As the word implies, individuation, it's an inside job. It takes place inside your psyche. Now, you were talking about projections. If there's something you don't like about another person or something you really do like about a person or a mythic or movie character, is probably something you don't like or do like about yourself, because we, you know, like a projection, you have to put it out on the wall to be able to see it. And with shadow work, you think, well, you know, you have to dig down deep and in the depths and the dark recesses of our consciousness. Actually, you don't have to dig too deep. If you were mining, you would need a very short drill because they're there. They're there all the time. We're not aware of them because we don't want to be, or we're not trained to be, or we just don't have that concept. And sometimes they rise up anyway. Mm-hmm. There's the notion of a Pluto crisis, the Pluto being the god of the underworld, that if there are shadow elements, and you're very, very right, and just like in an actual gold mine or diamond mine, it's deep in the earth and you have to cut through rock and layers of strata and all these things to get to it. And it's a difficult, you know, process. But in a Pluto crisis, the underworld realizes that if there's something that you haven't dealt with or something that really needs your attention, your consciousness to be brought up into the light, into the present, it will create some sort of a crisis in the outer world. So there is this parallel between the and deep, deep connection between the inner life and the outer world. But what individuation can address and solve really can't be done by electing a different person in office or passing a new bill or having some different kind of social structure that's going to go from the outside and then come into us. It actually works the other way. Now we have evidence around us. We can see things because we have to see them and they have to be in front of us. So whether somebody is mirroring back something we need to see, or somehow we are projecting that out onto another person saying, look at what they're doing. Can you believe aren't I like that a little bit myself? Now, sometimes it's like the circus mirror that it's like, oh, it's all exaggerated. But always ask if you're really put out by something somebody does, say, well, am I like that? And I'll just give a personal anecdote. Yeah. One of the things I've had trouble with, I guess, or I've felt I had trouble with, maybe I really don't, is being listened to. I think, well, no one's listening to me. Why don't you hear what I have to say? I have all this good advice. Why won't you listen? And then I pull back and go, maybe there's something I'm not listening to. Maybe I'm not listening to my higher self. Maybe I'm not listening to my own self. Mm. So it can always be put back on you, and it is an inside job. So this laboratory is our own existence. It is our own everyday lives, and we don't have to dig too deep. As a matter of fact, a lot of these shadow things are really hanging around. What we have to do, though, is turn an eye towards them and try not to be afraid. And this may sound a little like you're talking about schizophrenia. You have to kind of separate yourself from these things. Like, why do I always do that? I always self-sabotage. It's like, that's part of you. It's not you, all of you, but it's because if it is all of you, then there's no chance. You have no chance of
winning. Yeah, exactly.
I do this wrong and I have to change this about me. I have to change everything. It's a lot of the change comes through just being aware of these things and welcoming them back in. And you could even ask them, okay, self-sabotage, you could name it. Why are you doing this to me? Like almost put it a little bit, get a little bit of gap, a little bit of objective.
Speaking of that, and I don't mean to interrupt, but Robert Johnson's book on active imagination and different processes that you can do this work on your own, Inner Work, Robert Johnson, Inner Work is an excellent guide for that kind of practical work, confronting those inner figures and those inner complexes and so on. So
I'm gonna add that. Great. Well, if they have been broken off through a childhood trauma or adult trauma or anything, they're probably hurt too. They're probably wounded in some way, these aspects of yourself. So it also takes a light touch. Have a little compassion for yourself and these disowned or unrealized parts of yourself. Make a welcoming environment, like you might at a 12-step meeting. Come on in and see if we can do something. So it's owning them, but it's also inviting them in. And the scary stuff doesn't have to be too scary. It's a lot more scary when we don't address these things, because then, like the monster under the bed or in the closet in the darkness,
yeah,
you can make it as big and as horrible and traumatizing as you wish. But if you flick on a light switch, it's like, oh, okay, that was just a little shadow going across the wall. That really wasn't that big of a thing. They lose a lot of their power, the negative power.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great point. That's a great way to kind of summarize that is it, you know, in this work, always remember that you need to have respect for these different parts of yourself and have some compassion. I mean, I think too often we look at these parts of ourselves we don't like and we beat up on them and in the process on ourselves. Unfortunately, we do have to stop there. Thank you again, Chris, for that hosting and a great job there. I appreciate it. A wonderful a show on individuation.
Great.
I want to go over those books really quickly that we talked about one more time. So Anatomy of the Psyche, Edinger, Edinger, Jung, C.G. Jung, The Psychology of C.G. Jung, Yolanda Jacobi, J-A-C-O-B-I, Jacobi is how they pronounce it, actually, J-A-C-O-B-I. We didn't talk about this one, but this one is Owning Your Own Shadow, Robert Johnson. It's an excellent one. Creation of Consciousness, Edinger again. So all great books. Again, thank you, Chris. Great work. We are here every week on the Cosmic Eye Show and now on the video Cosmic Eye Show. So please continue to join us each Sunday for a new episode. Please support us if you can, anchor.fm/cosmiceye. And Chris is the author of Spirit in the Sky. I am the author of If You Can Worry, You Can Meditate. And please purchase our books if you get a chance. I think you will enjoy both of those. And we wish you all the best. Have a great week. Goodbye and God bless.